When is the last time you listened to a podcast about web development, web design, and small business and didn't fall asleep? Yes, we cover web development, web design, and small business, but like actual human beings with personalities. If you're a beginner, we're not going to talk over your head. It's more like asking your buddy for help. We have guests, we have fun, and let me tell you, these two can get off on a tangent. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to HTML All the Things Podcast. This is Matt Lawrence and Mike Curran.
That's right, everybody. We are back, and this is the HTML All the Things Podcast. This episode is titled CSS, Styling the Web and Learning Through Content with Kevin Powell. So Kevin Powell is, of course, our special guest this episode. And if you don't already know him, of which I'm sure many of you do, Kevin is known to some as the king of CSS, and to others as a CSS evangelist. Kevin runs a YouTube channel that teaches people front-end web development, design tips, tricks, and tutorials. For me personally, Kevin's videos has taught me a ton of CSS over the years that I use almost every day in my professional life. His channel now boasts over 800,000 subscribers, and his content doesn't end there. He also offers articles for you readers out there and premium courses if you're looking to enhance your learning even further. So if this sounds interesting to you and you want to support the show, you can go check us out on that Patreon, leave a review or rating on your podcast app, join us in our Discord server, or share this with your friends. And remember, before we cut to this interview, just want to remind you that we do have a Scrimba affiliate link if you want to learn how to code with their interactive media player code editor. Go and check out that link. It's in the show description if your podcast app supports hyperlinks. And if it does not, no worries, it'll be on htmlallthethings.com in this episode's show notes. And without further ado, without further delay, I present our interview with Kevin Powell right now. All right, everybody, we have Kevin on the line here. And before we jump into this loaded episode, Kevin, what's up? What's going on? What have you been working on? And how's it going?
Yeah, first, just thanks a lot for having me on. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm doing pretty good. So, I've just been recording videos all day long, basically. So hopefully my voice holds up pretty well. It's been I've been slacking a little bit the last little while. So it was a catch up day today of having some fun recording some stuff. And what I do all day long is just CSS. So more of the same, really.
Yeah. So how does that work? I don't know if you can give us any insight into that, because some people would probably be curious. Like, do you have Mondays a record day, Tuesdays an edit day, Wednesdays like an upload and scheduled day? How does that work?
Yeah, I've tried doing that and it just fails miserably usually. I'm not organized, I guess, for that. I do try and batch things. So it'd sort of be like, as I'm going through my content, it's sort of like, okay, now I need to plan some stuff out and then spend a couple of days usually pretty quick planning things and then going in and actually building demos and doing all of that for several videos and then going back over things, making sure everything's okay, titles, thumbnails, that type of fun stuff. And then I try and batch record usually like 2 days in a row of doing anywhere from 2 to 6 videos if I can. It depends how long they are and how, if I forget to record my audio, that's always a fun one and you get to do it again. But yeah, that's basically it.
I think people too, like they'll sort of forget that there's a bit of like a, even though it's like a technical video, there's still like a creative angle to it. And so like Mike and I, obviously as content creators ourselves, we will have trouble with, doing a record day and that type of thing as well. Cause it'll be like, man, we've been talking for like a long time. And we did one, I think a few weeks ago, where I had like a real bad cold or something. And that last episode, like it sounded like I was smoking like 3 packs a day for like 20 years. And I was like, guys, like we got to stop. Like we got a sponsor spot. I'm going to like post record the sponsor spot. Like we got to stop. People got to understand us. So, there's a creative angle. There's also like your voice will get strained and it's just something you don't think about if you don't, record that much, of course.
Yeah. I'm definitely better at it now. Early on, there was a lot of pasty mouths and forgetting you have your water and then you're listening to the recording going, oh man, that was a mistake. But
yeah, of course. But yeah, let's jump into some CSS stuff, because obviously I've been told you're the king of CSS. I had another king of CSS on the show before 2 years and years ago. It was a self-proclaimed, king of CSS way back in the day. So, but I've learned much of CSS from you, as I said before, before the episode. And so I want to kind of get your take on this. This is something that I've seen people sort of argue about, question. It's vanilla CSS versus something like SAS versus something like Tailwind CSS versus probably something else, another tool out there that I'm completely unaware of. And I guess people are kind of questioning, you know, is there really a point in learning vanilla CSS? So in 2024, in your opinion, what should people be learning first? Do these tools matter most? Did you learn vanilla? Like, what do you think on that?
Yeah, I definitely am on the learn vanilla bandwagon in a pretty big way. And the more I teach it, the more I try and emphasize that. Early on, when I was making videos, I would sort of bounce between doing vanilla stuff, using some SAS. I had some Bootstrap videos, and it was sort of, you know, whatever I was sort of front of mind for me. And I use SAS like day to day for my own project, so it made sense to use that in my videos. But seeing early on, seeing the struggles that people run into, and when it's like they don't know the core language itself, and you run into problems with, say, Tailwind, is, you know, it just becomes more work and it's a little bit harder. And like, if you're really good at CSS, then you can be good using Tailwind because right. It's just a different way of authoring it. If you're really good at CSS, then you can take advantage of a lot of the features that SAS has. If you're really good at CSS, you can take Bootstrap and turn it into your own thing instead of just banging your head against the wall trying to make like a simple modification that's not working because of whatever that's getting in the way. So I'm really a big proponent of focusing on the core language itself. And also, it's becoming a lot more advanced now and you can do a lot more with it. So I think there's a strong argument that some of those other tools aren't as important as they used to be.
That's definitely seems to be the case because we've talked about, you know, obviously JavaScript on the show countless times at this point. And we've had, proponents of people that are like, always just do a framework like React or, you know, enter in another framework here. Or, you know, no, like you should be learning the platform. The platform is maturing and it is sort of like that push and pull. I think things are still leaning more toward the framework side of things because people are working in teams and projects, large projects usually are done in React more commonly as of today type thing. But CSS is one of those things where like the platform really has matured and these other tools just, in my opinion, just sort of help. They're not like super, super helpful though. And like if you're booting up Svelte or whatever and using components, you know, using vanilla CSS within them is totally viable. And honestly, what most people are doing from what I see out there.
Yeah. I think that might be part of where some of it's coming from too. Like, these, you know, with Svelte or Vue or Astro and all these other ones, you just have this within your component. You have a little scope style block and it works and it's wonderful. I think it's pretty cool. Definitely. And I think it sort of takes away some of, you know, I think even Tailwind and some other things. I mean, if you go back to the days of Bootstrap, there was that solved layout problems because making a layout was hard because you had to use floats and that was a pain. And
that was a real pain. Yeah.
Right. So that was sort of the rise of things like, you know, Bootstrap was the big one, but there was a few other ones as well that sort of helped with that layout side of things. But then those problems went away. And then we had, you know, another ones that come up. You have the scale of projects these days. So we have different things that we try and solve there. And I think Tailwind specifically helps just because React doesn't have sort of that native scoped little style block that you have down at the bottom. So like, I think Tailwind works really well with React. And I think that's part of the reason it gained as much popularity as it has. And people also just like, you know, it is a different way of authoring it. And there's advantages and disadvantages to it. But I think that's also why it's important to know the core language is so you know, is this the right tool for me or do I need to bother with it?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, this actually leads well into sort of another sub question I have in this topic because we're a proponent, like Mike and I, we're a proponent of, you know, a fan of the vanilla platform, like learn that first, including HTML, CSS and JS as well. Mm-hmm. Like learn that first, at least to a certain extent. And then usually what we say is, okay, now you're probably job searching, which is usually the people that we're talking to. And so then you go to React or something like that. But with CSS, like we just sort of like kind of figured out here, you can kind of get away with the vanilla platform in more than one case. So, and like, excuse me, unlike JavaScript, where you kind of like have to go to React if you want to apply to many jobs. What do you think about once someone is experienced with vanilla CSS, if they're really comfortable with it, but they haven't yet mastered it? Do they double down and spend more time mastering it? Or do they go, okay, I know I better learn, look for a job post, find that they use Tailwind. Now I'll learn Tailwind. Like, what do you think on that side of things?
Yeah, I think what you just said is a really good answer of like, look what the what people are looking for on job posts. I wouldn't be surprised, especially if, you know, in today's market, there's probably a decent amount that are looking for things. I still see Bootstrap used a lot. It's crazy. And then Tailwind is obviously popular these days. So I would say definitely it's worth diving into and experimenting with and playing with to have some experience with it and to show like, here's like a little side project I built with it, just to show that you do have that experience, because you probably will run across a job that will be using it. And I think, you know, I've been teaching CSS for a decade now, and I'm still learning new stuff all the time. So like, yeah, I think that's just front end development in general, is like, you're never a quote unquote master. You're just sort of getting better all the time. So I think like, once you have a certain comfort level with it, using these other tools can be good. And even I learned a lot by using other tools that I don't use anymore, but just sort of understanding and stealing the parts of it that I like and integrating it into how I write my own CSS afterwards. So I think there's benefits there too, of trying whatever's out there just to see what it's about, why people like it. Maybe you don't like it, but you can still, you know, gain some knowledge and some useful stuff from it, and it can look good on your CV, obviously.
The sort of external experiences make a lot of sense to me, because I remember when I was learning CSS, I started with vanilla, but then I was like, well, like, what's this SAS thing? And I think someone had pulled me into a project and they were using a bit of SAS. So I was like, okay, I'll learn that. And the experience I kind of gained from that was I used like some command line tools and like had the command prompt, like this is years ago now, but had the command prompt listen to the directory and automatically sort of compile the SAS down to CSS again. And it's like, those are, even though that's just a little bit, that's just touching on the command line stuff that a more complex dev environment would kind of thrive on. It is still something where I'm like, okay, I'm starting to understand that it's not just files anymore. You know, back then it's a little bit of this command line stuff. There's other things happening. Okay. And then it's not as like foreign to me once I get to like React or Vue or Svelte type thing.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. That's one nice thing with that side of things, is when you're introducing tools where it's not just like, you know, the most disheartening thing is when you're trying to follow a tutorial for something and they go through a whole bunch of command line stuff and you're just like, I don't understand one thing they just did, right? Like they're just taking in all this as like, oh, you must know this because you're doing development stuff. But it's like, you know what? Like if you're teaching how to do that, like, and it's beginner tutorial, like the introduction to SAS, let's say, and you're just like assuming someone knows how to use the command line, they probably don't. So like, but I do think, like you said, like SAS is a very simple way to get into it, and the tooling there, or post CSS even these days is popular too, where you can get nesting and some other the features and combining files, and it's, you do need to figure that side out. There's a configuration that goes into it, but it's nothing too difficult, and it probably is a nice way to level up a little bit before you dive into some of the bigger things.
You know, funny enough, I know AI had to come up at some point, and I find that AI actually uses, or you can tell that the tutorial makers are sometimes assuming that you understand command line or other things, because AI will do that. I was trying to get something working in Svelte. I'm just learning Svelte now, actually. And I was trying to get something working, and it's like, run these commands, do this. And I was like, well, it says that doesn't exist. Now what do I do? So you like go down that rabbit hole, and then I find out, oh my God, like the first step that I got as an answer from AI was actually about 10 steps down the list. And I'm not even supposed to be doing that. You know, that's old, or, you know, whatever it was, too far down the list in steps. And it's just like, okay, so like, you know, obviously the AI is quoting saying, hey, this is from this blog. And I'm like, if I went to that blog, I'd be in the same situation. I'm starting at step 10 that it says step one. What am I doing here? You know, it's a big mess at that point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And even on that, with AI being behind a little bit, with especially all the JS frameworks that are out now, I think it is a bit of an issue, because they're just constantly introducing breaking changes. It seems like, especially Next.js just seems to be like continually coming up with these new breaking changes and stuff. But even stuff like Svelte, like they just had, I don't know if their big update that they just had anything big, but it was a year or maybe a little bit longer than that ago, where I remember there was a really big shift in how they were doing stuff. And it's like all those old tutorials basically mean nothing anymore, because they just, you know, and so, yeah, with AI, you have to be a little bit careful with those things, for sure.
For sure, for sure, yeah. And it's an AI, it's like, I came from the IT and the sysadmin field, and seeing things like that were like, because my business partner, he uses Svelte all the time, and I'll even say to him, like, hey, man, like, Svelte 5 is coming up. Like, do I just wait, you know, and wait for 5? And he's like, well, no, just migrate later. I'm like, migration's a bad word in the IT world. Like, we'll do it, but it's not good. Like, it's scary. It's like a tidal wave coming at you. It's like, we got to prepare a lot for this type thing. It's, you know, it's serious. So
yeah, it's cool. I find these days, at least a lot of the time, the people that are working behind, you know, making all of this happen, they realize that. And a lot of the migration tools they put in are pretty good, especially if it's something that's like currently active, it's usually not too bad. But I guess it also depends on the scale of the project and stuff too. But yeah, it can be, it can definitely be scary. You hold your breath a little bit and hope everything works.
Sometimes just pressing update on WordPress is scary to me. So
yeah. Totally. Yeah. I've had the blank page, you know, what was it, the white page where just you're project's basically dead.
White screen of death,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, and that was in the days before version control. So that's fun when that happens, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's still plagues WordPress to this day. There's something else I wanted to talk about as well, and it's sort of, I don't know, I feel like it's old hat CSS, but then it kind of isn't because I see people talking about it, and it's CSS naming conventions. So for the audience out there, you know, CSS naming conventions were very popular. I'm going to say this is just my dating, like around 2015, probably before that, and then till about 2018, and probably still after that. One big one was called BEM, or B-E-M, and it was aimed at making CSS code more readable and maintainable by basically having like a naming like sequence that you would have under your class name. So instead of you just having like dot title, you would have like dot title, and then I forget exactly what all the different parts were. It'd be like dot title, that's part of the header, and that's part of yada, 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 et cetera. So now in 2024, and this was just a random Google search that I did a few weeks ago, I was thinking to myself, man, like I was going to learn BEM back in the day. I kind of stopped hearing about it, never learned it. And then I just forgot about it until a couple weeks ago, looked it up, and there were, you know, Reddit threads and forum threads talking about, you know, in 2023 at the time, you know, what, like, where's BEM? Like, do we use it? Do we need these naming conventions anymore? And many people said no. And that's because you already have these sort of like scoped, context sensitive components that are in these frameworks. So for example, in Svelte, you may have a component that's just called content box, and you can have a generic title class, like a CSS class just called title, because obviously it's the title of the content box, and the content box only has one title. So it's context sensitive. It's already scoped from a technical angle. So you don't need to worry about like making sure it's like, no, it's header, this, that, whatever. So in your opinion, Kevin, you know, what's the status of CSS naming conventions like BEM in 2024 and into the future?
Yeah, I think you're right in that was probably the peak of it. I think it's still around and still, you'll definitely find organizations that are still using it. But I do agree that it's faded down with between the rise of things like Tailwind, with those scope things like you get with Svelte and Vue and stuff, where you don't, you know, you're just scoping to that component, like you said, that makes it so you don't have to worry about those things. So that makes life a lot easier. I think people have also, I was a very big proponent of BEM for a long time. And the more I worked on it and the more I used it, I was found a lot of things with it that I didn't love as much with stuff. And like, you know, people ask me what I think of Tailwind, and I always say, I get why people like it, but it's not for me. But I also think that there's value in utility classes just up to sort of a certain point. So like that was the sort of, BEM is the opposite of Tailwind in that sense, where there is no utility classes effectively. It's all sort of class, you know, semantically named things, let's say. And so like I had my own shift away from it. And as part of that was probably being influenced by seeing what other people were doing too, where they're sort of finding this mix of, you know, well, that we'll get that class name, but we'll use utilities for this. So I think there was some movement away for in that direction going on, and there still is. And like you said, there's that the whole idea of the scope styling and other stuff that's come up. Plus, we're now getting scope in CSS itself, which it's not, the support for it is very low right now. But you'll be able, you know, in just vanilla CSS, you'll be able to scope to stuff. And it's actually more powerful than scoping in terms of like how you do it in the JS frameworks and stuff, because you can sort of define from an area to another element within, anyway, it's weird. And I haven't done a full dive into it yet because I'm waiting for browser support to get a bit better. But it's definitely, I think that'll also have an influence. We have layers in CSS now that are hitting a good point in terms of support that I think alleviates some of the reasons you might want to use something like BEM as well. So yeah, I think between a maturation of the language itself and new stuff we have available within CSS, plus shifts in just the way that we work, whether it's some of the JS frameworks that offer stuff, I think BEM won't go away. I think that you'll probably run into a project at one point that's using it, or people that still use it, but it's probably going to become more of a niche thing rather than the industry leading convention that was around for so long. That was a really long way to get to that answer. Sorry.
No, it totally makes sense because it was a big thing in CSS back in the day. Because, you know, as we know, things stack up in web development to like learn this, now learn this, now learn this. And that was a big piece where I was like, mm-hmm. man, like I just learned Flexbox. I think it was at the time. Do I go into BEM or do I keep getting more familiar with CSS? Because Grid wasn't around at the time, or like, browser support was probably nil at the time. So it's like, well, I'm not going to learn this. You know, there's no guides either, really. So it's mm-hmm. like, what do I learn next? And it was like BEM was on that ticket, but then like it just evaporated. It just, or at least from the zeitgeist anyway, it just seemed to evaporate. And like you're right, it seems to be sort of the need of it is going away. It's almost like it just reminds me just as I was speaking of jQuery in a way, where it's like a lot of organizations, and I think it's in WordPress as well. Like a lot of organizations, a lot of sites still have jQuery either actively working in their projects or it's just in the code base of whatever CMS or whatever they're using. And it's like, you know, is jQuery dead? It's like, it's not necessarily dead. It's just not in the zeitgeist. So it's like,
yeah, someone told me, I didn't look it up. I should have checked it. So don't quote me on this, but I think they just released a new version of jQuery. And I was like, really? Oh, cool. Okay. I haven't used that in a long time. But I think if you look up like the stats, and part of it's just because it's been around forever and it is in, I think it's still in WordPress too. But it's something like, you know, everyone, React is where everything's at. And it's like, say like 10% of all websites, whereas it's like 86% still use jQuery or something crazy like that. Like,
yeah.
It's insane, the difference. But yeah, like you never hear anyone talking about it anymore.
It's kind of the I think we mentioned this on the show too before. It's like the business angle versus like the developer angle. Because it's like if the developers are almost like, you know, they're usually on like the cutting edge. They want like the absolute best thing. And when they try a new tool, that is a good tool. They're like, man, this is where the future is. But the thing is like businesses are slow. They're going to move slowly. But also, even if they're not technical businesses, like I run a web dev agency, people will call me and specifically ask for a WordPress site because they've trained marketing to use WordPress. I'm not going to convince them that, you know, enter in custom solution here is going to be better. They're going to be like, yeah, but like, I'm not calling for that, right? I'm calling for WordPress. So like, I'm just going to go find someone that'll make me a WordPress site. So it is that sort of like zeitgeist versus like, you know, cutting edge versus like what can you make money on, you know, at the end of the day, that sort of comes in. Now we were talking about you know, browser support a little bit in the BEM conversation, and this is something that we did a recent, I think, full episode on, actually, for the listener if you want to go check that out. And basically I want to get your take on this. So like browser support is really good in comparison to the IE days for CSS, right? Where it's like, even, you know, IE 10 to IE 11, IE 9, etc. Just in the IE, in Internet Explorer, was a nightmare. And then, you know, now it's like we have these modern browsers, and you used to have to contend with IE. You don't really have to do that anymore. You know, for most people, you don't really touch IE anymore. And the main sort of modern browsers, Firefox, Chrome, and Edge, and Safari, are more or less, you know, together. But there is some sort of like fringe CSS here and there, maybe new things or things that just didn't get picked up that have partial support behind a flag, maybe no support on one, but support on the others, that type of thing. So once that support starts catching on, usually it does, right? It goes red on can I use, then it goes behind a flag, then it goes green to an extent, right? At some point, it's going to be good, I'd say, to use in production, as most features are. At what point do you think it's safe for someone learning, right, that's saying, okay, you know, I'm going to start making production projects, but, you know, like, it's green, but only in the latest version. Is this safe in production? Like, what do you think on that?
Yeah, so I think it really depends on what the feature is. And, you know, it depends is always the best answer that everyone wants to hear. But but just as an example, there's scroll timeline in CSS now, which is bit like scroll-based animations, but CSS only. You don't need to touch any JavaScript. It's really cool. It's super easy. I love it. Right now, it's only supported in Chromium, so it's only in Chrome and Edge, which is probably something, I don't know, 60 to 70% of the market these days. But, you know, it's still missing Safari and Firefox. So you would just go, well, I can't use it then because it's not ready for production. But to me, you could probably use it as a progressive enhancement because, you know, you probably don't need that scroll-based animation. It just sort of looks cool. It's a nice like extra thing. But if everything's on the page and then if that scroll-based animation is there and just makes it look cooler, well, then it works for everybody and you're not breaking anybody's experience. You're just enhancing it for the people that are on the Chromium browsers, and eventually the other ones are going to get there because it's part of the official spec right now. Whereas, say, something like Scope that I was talking about before, if I use Scope and the browser doesn't support it, then that CSS just goes in the garbage and it doesn't work. So that's it's harder to do that as a progressive enhancement. It becomes something that's sort of like a core feature, or layers is the same way. Layers sort of lets you group things into layers so you can worry a little bit less about specificity. But if the browser doesn't support it, then that CSS just doesn't do anything. So it becomes a breaking type of thing. So if it's something that can enhance, the best one usually I used to give, but the support for it's really good now, but it was the accent color property, where you'd say accent color purple, and it was for form elements. So your select and your checkboxes and stuff like that, and your the range input, you could change the color of them. And so it's like, or there's marker too, which is for changing the bullet points, and you can change the color of your bullet points on list items. And it's sort of like, well, if that doesn't work, who cares? Like, it's just that's really a small thing. You're not breaking anything. They're still just going to have the default colors if not, and then you're enhancing it. So even if browser support was zero, but I know it's in there, or it's behind a flag somewhere, and I want to experiment with it, then that's perfect. But, you know, I'll start using that and then just let the browsers catch up. So I really do look at which one it is. And then I also, like, now I am looking at layer. I mentioned layers because it's something that I've been thinking about, because it's about to hit about 95% support now. It's on all the major browsers. And I'm like, can I start using that now? And if it was a personal project, I probably would, so I could start getting used to using it and playing with it. If it was something where it was for like really a public facing site that I needed to make sure that it works for everyone, I'd probably still hold off a little bit, because 95% support's good, but 5% is still potentially a lot of people.
Sure, yeah.
So it is one of those hard things to do, because when you see it green across every browser going back, like, I think Layers has been supported in all the browsers since 2022. So it's sort of like, well, it's 2 years now. I should be able to use it. And it's sort of like, it's getting there. But I'm not sure, you know, you're sort of looking for that. Maybe look at your, if you have analytics for your own audience, that can give you a better idea too of when it might be safe to start doing it, if you have access to that type of information. It is something that different companies too, I know, have different things. Some need it to be at like 98.5%, and other ones, you know, they're happy at 95%. Some are happy if it's just green across the board, like on the latest release. So I guess it depends a little bit on how adventurous you're willing to be.
Yeah, and we've had projects too where it's, you know, like websites are, you know, generally en masse, excuse me, over the internet. But the thing is like, sometimes you're making like an intranet website, and we had a horror story one time where it was actually a business partner. He used CSS Grid and then found out that all the devices that they fleeted out to the people had a version of Safari that was non-updatable and did not support CSS Grid. And so had to redo everything in Flexbox, I think it was, at the very last minute. So it's one of those things where it's like, okay, like, this is context sensitive at this point. Like, even though, you know, I'm sure he checked the can I use or whatever and used CSS Grid even in the past before that, it's like, well, in this particular context, it's not quite there, right?
Not quite there, yeah. Yeah. And I get it too, and it's frustrating when it's, I mean, that's a good example of like, definitely find out what the, you know, where it's at for what you're working on. But like what you said off the beginning, where it was like, it's a lot better now. Like, now it's more about waiting for these new features to be have broad enough support. And like, for people that are, and it can be frustrating. You're sitting there waiting for these things. Like, it's there, I want to use it. But like, comparing it to the old days where you'd have a feature, but it would work differently across every single browser. Like, that was infuriating. And even if you go back far enough, when it was one of the early Internet Explorers, and I don't know if it was Netscape, they actually had the box model would render differently, and there was no box sizing border box. Because the spec was defined how box sizing worked, but it was kind of vague. So I think it was Netscape actually did it one way, like where the padding was included, and then Internet Explorer did it where it was excluded, and there was no way to change it. You had to use this crazy hack to try and get them both to like work the same way. And it's like, you know, it sucks having to wait for new features, but if we don't have to live through that, I'm not going to complain too much.
I'm glad I never dealt with Netscape Navigator. I used it in like elementary school and stuff like that. But like, Man, I'm glad I didn't work with it because I forgot all about it till you mentioned it. So, yeah. The one thing that's interesting as well with this like sort of CSS features is, I don't know if you like have any insight on this, but is there like, do you know of any like reason why a browser would potentially sort of like hold back a feature or like when all their competitors, you know, have layers or whatever, do you know of a reason why one would hold back? Is there like performance angle there? Like obviously like Chromium is an engine that powers Chrome and powers Edge, like or at least the newest Edge, whatever, Edge Chromium. Do you know of anything? Like I've never really talked to anyone about that before. Is there like a, I don't know, like a tech political angle, I guess, for that?
Usually, if as long as it's something that like has been gone into like the draft phase within the CSS spec, usually the only holdup at that point is either resources or it could be a technical issue.
Okay.
So like right now, the browser that seems to be lagging behind the most on features tends to be Firefox just because they have the smallest team and the least funding. So it takes longer to do stuff. There's a company called, I'm going to say the wrong name, because I don't deal with this stuff. I don't want to say the wrong name, but there's a company that the browser engines work with who helps also in implementing features within browsers, and they work with all the different engines. So, you know, if Safari is needing work on something and they might hire them to help, you know, get that side of things done. One feature that I know was on a technical side of things was with SubGrid. So Firefox was the first one to do SubGrid, and then it took 4 years for Safari and then another year before Chrome added it. But Chrome actually rewrote their entire rendering engine for layout, like the layout engine got completely rewritten. So I don't know if it's because the old layout engine couldn't do SubGrid, or if it was bad performance, or if they just were in the process of updating the engine and they're like, well, we're not going to add a feature into the old version and then have to re-implement it again in the new one. But so yeah, they rewrote their entire layout rendering engine and then added SubGrid to it after that. So, you know, there's different things sometimes that can come at play. And I guess it depends on the complexity and the other stuff. And then it also just depends, like Safari has a few features that no other browser has, and they've had them for like 5 years, plus on like a lot of typography related things. They were the first ones to do some of the color stuff too, but that was just, I think Apple, you know, Apple likes things that look pretty.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah,
they had their name, right? So like they wanted this extra typography control, so they implemented it, and they wanted to be able to show off their screens that have a wider color gamut. So they put in that new color features, that took until very recently for the other browsers to finally get behind. But so probably some company politics that go into it to a certain extent. But also nowadays they do seem much more aligned than they used to though.
Yeah. I think companies are starting to realize that, you know, having the proprietaryness, I guess, if that's not a word, but the proprietariness of features and like trying to like, I own the platform and stuff like that. Those walls are starting to come down. We're seeing that in other areas of tech, gaming, especially most recently and with Xbox. And we're seeing a bunch of other companies starting to realize like we want everyone else's customer base too. So like maybe, you know, owning the entire platform and like, you know, spending money to basically have a lesser amount of people that we're exposed to is like not a good idea. Because like, I mean, if your browser becomes like super annoying to deal with, it'll probably start collapsing and then poof, you know, in 5-10 years, it's gone. And they don't want that. Right. Like, of course, like that, there's a reason why Edge or IE went to Edge old, I don't know what you'd call that, and then and then went to Edge Chromium, because they're like, we're falling behind again, and this is going to be a nightmare again, like it was in Internet Explorer, and we do not want to become the meme, right, of like, you use IE to install Chrome. So it makes sense to just be like, yeah, we have a good product now. If you want to come check it out.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I know on that front too, I mean, the amount of money they must have tried to invest into doing the new engine just to finally switch. But in a sense, it has helped Chromium out in general, just because you now have Google engineers and Microsoft engineers that both work on that engine. So it's a lot more resources that tend to go into it.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I want to change gears here a little bit from the CSS talk, and I'm sure CSS will still come up, but I want to talk a little bit about content absorption, because like you and I are content creators. You make a lot of YouTube videos and a lot of tutorials and that type of thing. And I get people that DM me a lot in what is referred commonly to as tutorial hell in this industry. And basically, you know, for the listener, if you don't know what that is, it's basically people getting bogged down, you know, constantly watching learning content and feeling productive because they're watching learning content, but they never actually produce anything. They never actually open up an IDE. Or I mean, a famous one for me is like, I'll be like, oh, I'll watch a coding tutorial on the TV.
and I'll just like, you know, kind of chill on the couch, but it's like, I don't have a laptop or anything open though. And I'll just like do that for hours and then be like, I don't remember what the first 9 videos was I watched, and I watched about 15 type thing. So, you know, to break this cycle, what do you recommend people do when they watch coding tutorials / guides on YouTube? Such as, you know, do they, you know, just, do they like take notes? Do they always have a laptop open? Do they watch like a collection of videos, maybe even on a certain topic, but they have a hard limit? Like they have like a, I'm watching 10 videos and then I'm implementing these things, or, you know, what do you think?
Yeah. So I think, you know, for learning to be sticky, you sort of have to get your hands wet and try and make stuff. My general advice for people that are following my stuff, and I all of my courses that I sell, the very beginning, before we get into the content, I have like one or two lessons that are just like, don't just watch this course, like make sure you, like I sort of give advice. So I'll sort of reiterate a little bit from what I say there usually, which is like, you know, if it's something new, there's no harm in just like sitting down, watching it, getting an idea. I think there's value in seeing how someone approaches something. But if you're just watching it passively, that's all you're not going to learn the code. You're just going to see and get sort of an idea of maybe how the person's approaching it, some of the mindset that they're getting into. But if you actually want to learn the code, you just have to write the code. So usually what I say is make sure at the very minimum you're following along. And, you know, if it's a blog post, don't copy paste. Or if it's docs, there's some really good docs out there these days where it's, you know, even the code block is there and there's a little copy button. You don't even have to select it. You hit the copy button, paste it in your code, it works. It's great.
Right.
Yeah. Right. But then the next time, and again, it depends what you're trying to do. Are you trying to learn how to do it, or are you just trying to like ship something to production? Those are two very different things. But if you're trying to learn how to do something, like write the code line by line, pause the video, or, you know, put the blog post on the side and try and do it. And then the other thing I often say is like, when you follow along step by step with someone, you can feel like, you know, you get to the end and it works and you feel great. That's, you know, the worst is when you follow line by line and then it doesn't work and theirs does work and you get really mad. I've been there too. So I understand the pain of that. But when everything works, you can feel like, oh, that's great. I just learned how to do that. Let's just say it's a to-do list. You're early on. That's the sort of the classic. Everybody learns how to do a to-do list. And then you get to the end, you finish your to-do list and it works and you're super happy. Try doing it again now, like whether it's close it, you know, make a new file and start right away, or wait till the next day and try again. And most people probably won't know what the first line of code they should write is, and they're just like completely blocked again. And it's, that becomes part of that tutorial hell. And I think that just following along with things isn't enough. It helps when you're writing the code, but like, try and even do like one step ahead if you're following with something. Like, oh, can I figure out what this next step is going to be? And then see if it works. And if it does, see if the person did it a little bit differently. And it's a lot more time consuming, 100%. But that's how it sticks more. And then you run into a problem. And then you have to see, like, how do I fix this problem? And then that helps that information stick too, because you found a solution to what you were trying to do. So yeah, I think that's really important. And just trying to do things without looking at the answer on the screen, whether it's like, maybe they even do, you watch 5 minutes and then you pause, throw it off to the side, and then you try and do like recreate that last 5 minutes without looking at what they're doing, like anything like that, where you have to use active, like you have to use your memory and you're not just copying what's there, I think is super, super important. And the other thing to remember is that you're not going to remember everything that you do. It's an awkward way to say that. You have to remember that you won't remember. But just know that you won't remember everything. And that's normal too. Like when you're watching tutorials, if you watch one of my tutorials, people are like, you might feel like what the person, like this professional who's done this tutorial, is just this coding master who can just make this entire thing happen. If it's one of my videos, I've already done it before I recorded. I might have done it twice. I have the demo built. I have the code that like off screen that I can reference if ever I get stuck. So like, of course it works perfectly because I'm referencing something, because I'm doing it as educational. So like, I'm trying to show and explain all of that. I don't want to run into mistakes necessarily. But I do include mistakes when I make them sometimes, just because that's a useful skill too. And like, you can learn seeing how other people fix their mistakes. But if ever you feel like the people you're watching are just super talented and you're not there, go watch a live stream. Like go on Twitch and find people that are live streaming that are professionals, and you're going to see what it's really like. And it probably looks a lot like your own process of Googling and finding stuff and asking AI and trying to figure out your way along too. So just don't get discouraged if everything just doesn't instantly like flow out onto the page, because that's super normal.
One thing I actually want to touch on there too is, you know, so when you watch a tutorial as well, like you're saying, it's sort of like a scripted thing. Live stream is a live stream, of course, but then it's more of a scripted thing. And one thing I find, and this is in the documentation, which is obviously also scripted and edited, you know, to the nine, is because projects are so complex these days, where there's just a lot, like there's a lot of files, lots of directories, lots of files and blah, blah, blah. One of the things that I really struggle with is I'll go to like some documentation or go to a guide or whatever, and I'll understand like the code block. I'll, you know, read it or watch it, understand it. But then I'm like, okay, where does this go? And that is always infuriating, where it's like, I do not know where this goes. And I used to always feel like, you know, like a fool, be like, man, everyone knows where this goes. But if you go into the WordPress forums, the amount of times people go, here's like this code snippet that'll get rid of comments or something. And the people go like, well, where do we put that? The amount of times it's been just put that into your functions PHP, like that code almost needs to be like an AI needs to come in there and just start handling typing that, because it's just like these projects are getting, you know, so big. There's, you know, they're out of context. And then obviously they're, you know, things are edited that, you know, it's difficult out there.
Yeah, definitely. I've been there too. You're just like, I think that's another thing though, that you just said, of like being able to sit down and read some code and understand it is very different also from being able to write it yourself. I think very that true. That tricks people sometimes into thinking they know more, and then they get frustrated when they try and do stuff and it doesn't work, because when they look at the other code, yeah, that I get it. That means I must know it. But there's definitely a difference between understanding something and being able to do something. And I often use skateboarding as an analogy there, where it's like you could go to a skate park and watch somebody skateboarding and they're doing ollies and like all this cool stuff, and if you watch them long enough, you're going to understand how they're doing it, but you're not going to be able to just step on the skateboard the first time and be able to do it right. Like it's the same thing with coding, just a lot less painful when you fail. But it's that same idea of like understanding something and being able to do something are very different skills.
Absolutely. It's like the human like elements, like we have to practice, like that repetition to understand the patterns and understand what to put on the page, as you said earlier, kind of thing, like where it's like, oh, like the training wheels are off, like I'm at a blank IDE now, you know. Yep. What's a CSS? You know, like, what do we do here? And that's going to be a question that, you know, the absolute beginners are going to have. Absolutely. 100%. I actually have another content creator, I guess, question for you as well. And it's something that I found the other day. So I went into my YouTube subscription feed and I saw just like a list of stuff. And of course, it's my personal one. So I have CSS stuff in there. I have gaming stuff in there. I got documentaries and, you know, history stuff like that, because I'm interested in that sort of thing. And I thought to myself, you know, if you went to a traditional school, let's just say for CSS or just web development in general, right? You went to a traditional school, the lesson plans are sort of curated and everything's just sort of, you know, done and whatever. Very similar to like a Udemy course or like another course that someone puts together. It's sort of like, you know, we're going to build this project, or we're going to understand, you know, the latest, you know, 2023 features of CSS or whatever. There's a topic, it's defined, and then boom, that's good. But when people are sort of going through content creators that are teaching things, every content creator is different, and every content creator is also going to just sort of, when they're just uploading to a generic feed, they're not going to necessarily like make like, okay, part one, part two, part three, part four. Some will, but not many will. So my question is, if someone is, you know, brand new at whatever, CSS, let's say in this case, or JavaScript, whatever, and they're learning that thing, like we're going to learn React, let's do that. But they find little bits of what they need from a bunch of creators. Let's say they subscribe to you, Kevin, they subscribe to me for the podcast, whatever. But then they go in the next week after having subscribed to, say, five content creators. Now it's no longer all relevant to React or what they're working on. It's like, you know, someone's talking about layers now. I might be talking about like dirt samples or something. Like it, you know, it could be anything, probably web development related, but still it's kind of all over the place. So what do you think on that? You know, like if like someone in the audience right now is learning something like React, should they focus on just absorbing content in that one topic, or should they watch sort of like the scattering of content? If they've, say, done that, they've subscribed to a bunch of different content creators and there's sort of like that shotgun blast of different topics just to sort of get a feel for other things.
Yeah, I would say the first thing just to be wary with any social learning anything from social media, which YouTube sort of falls into that, is like content creators like me have like a shiny new syndrome thing going on, where it's like we like talking about whatever is like this new thing we've discovered and that we're playing with and that we're excited by. So like a lot of stuff I might have on my channel is like these new cool features in CSS, but they're kind of advanced. Or you know, and you see that with other people that will be actually like changing. You might find someone you're learning React, and then like you find a creator you really like, but then you look at their new content and it's all using Svelte, or it's all, you know, they've switched and they're doing some C++ stuff or some Rust stuff. Like they just completely shifted gears because that's sort of where they're at now. So I think, you know, just because you see this other content, even if it's from people that you'd like, I think it, especially if you're in the early days of learning, that it's important to try and focus on what you're trying to learn. I get people that ask me of like, can you make a roadmap of your videos, or like a playlist that puts all like the videos in the right order? And I'm like, no, just because like for me, I have my beginner playlist that needs updating because it's 7 years old now, but it's still, I think it's fine other than one or two videos in there that look at sort of outdated stuff like floats, but it's like start there, get through those. And then it depends on what you need to do. And like with web development, like once you get through that very base, I think it becomes very like, if you're, you know, make that to-do app and make that work, and you'll run into problems when you're trying to get that to work. And then you can find the video or the blog article or whatever that will help you solve that problem. And then you'll start building another project and you'll get stuck on that. And then you'll go find another thing and it's going to help you solve that problem. And I think that's where it becomes more useful of like, you know, find something early on where it has some structure to it, whether it's a free course, maybe a Udemy course, anything you can find, a playlist on YouTube that sort of walks you through those early parts and gives you that foundation that you need just to get you going. And then it's just find what you need, and don't get distracted by people talking about the new stuff that's coming out, because we all get distracted by it too. And so it's like, focus on what you need to focus on, I think. But I don't want to say like don't know about that stuff, because I learned SAS because somebody that I was learning CSS from was using SAS a lot, and I got interested in it, and then I got really deep into it. So like, it's okay that like maybe it'd change your direction if you see something. I think that's fine. Like, don't get so laser focused, but having some focus is probably a good thing,
especially with web development, just because it's everywhere. Like, there's a lot of different ways to do it. You know, some people will just be like, you must learn React. Some people will be like, you must learn this. No, you must do vanilla then, you know, and the list goes on and on and on. You know, I'm sure listening to other podcasts, they'll have completely different, you know, things that I didn't even think of different pathways to learn things. We had one case where somebody was coming from, I want to say, this might be wrong, but I want to say game development. Mm-hmm. And they were like, vanilla, you know, everything is just too easy. Like, it's way too easy. And it's like, oh, this is a different angle I never even thought of. Like, you should be going right to something else because you just understand what loops
right.
are and
yes, ifs yes, are and, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
stuff like that. So it's less of a distraction for people that experience. It's more like, ooh, like, what's that? Maybe I'll use that. I'll move on. Whereas other people might be like, do I have to use that? You know, once it gets into that confusing realm where they're not sure if they should be using layers, like, but I don't have layers. Is that okay? Uh-oh. And then they like go down that rabbit hole not knowing. You don't have to have layers, like, you know, relax type thing. You know, yeah, absolutely. Like, the getting through that sort of like that bulk or over that hump, as you said, kind of thing will really help, you know, whether it's a Udemy course or whatever, then you can start being like, you know what, I'll explore the land that is web development.
Yeah.
So I do have another content based question for you. And, you know, watching individual topic tutorials and playing with related code is much different than creating and working on a project. Mm-hmm. So I actually ran into this a lot because I know people hate it, but I like W3 schools because I like those code playgrounds. That's how I understand things best. You tell me something, I kind of like understand it 10%. And then the example is like, okay, I'm at about 50. Now, if I can go in and break it, I'm at about, you know, maybe 80, and then I'll get to 100 eventually type thing. So with that being said, do you have any tips for developers looking to move from learning concepts, meaning individual concepts, this is a style sheet, this is what a class is, the list goes on, to actually creating, using those concepts to creating their first projects? Are there any maybe project management pitfalls that you think that they should avoid, even if it's just a personal learning project?
Yeah, that's, first of all, don't get discouraged if it's hard at the beginning. It's a little bit like we were talking about before, where that like first time you're like, okay, I've learned all of these things, I know what I'm doing, and then you try and you just have that blank ID, you know, the cursor's blinking away and you're staring at it and it feels like it's taunting you almost because you just have no idea what to do. It's, you know, that's normal that that happens. So when you first start trying to do your own stuff, like, don't let that dissuade you. One thing that I'll 100% say is people, especially since I focus on CSS, which is very visual, we're making the visual come to life with code. People tell me like, oh, I'm really struggling with like the design, making the designs and stuff. And it's like, if you're working on a personal project, whatever it is, and you're trying to design it too, like that's a completely different skill set than writing the code that makes the design. Like one's you're the designer, the other one is you're the developer. So like if, you know, even if it's, you want to make, your first project or whatever, like don't just use, you know, look at something, find something to reference at least, to try and make it happen. Cause if you're just trying to code it from scratch and come up with the design and come up with the functionality and everything else, like that's this extra thing that you haven't learned that you're trying to figure out. And then if it looks like really bad, you can get demotivated by that too. Especially if the stuff you've been doing up until now following other stuff looked decent and you're like, well, why doesn't my new thing look good? So that can be frustrating. So don't try and design stuff. Find like, there's things like Frontend Mentor or iCode This. There's another one too that I can't think of, but like at least they provide design. So you have the design, they're giving you the requirements of what to do, and then you can start trying to make it happen. So I think things like that are useful. And then, yeah, just when it comes to like project management and stuff, like I think that's where you learn a lot early on of like when you're doing the smaller things where it's just like these little examples and you're learning about the basics. And then you have a project where all of a sudden the organization of everything matters. And then you start running into more pitfalls. But I think that's just like, that's a hard thing to teach. It's sort of like you have to find like, oh, that didn't work because of this. And over time, you sort of, I think, develop better habits. And that can also be where it's worth watching those videos, not so much coding along with them, but just watching someone work on a larger project. So you're getting an idea of how they're handling that side of things. So you're not focused on like, what's the code they're writing? You're just looking at that, the concepts they're using, or like, how are they approaching the project as a whole? And I think that type of thing can be useful too, especially if you feel like you're running into like, how do I organize all of this code? Which is obviously a big thing that we all still struggle with. And it's one of those things, you know, or if you're trying to name things, naming is the hardest thing and you'll never get good at it. So like, it's, you know, that's the ever existing problem of naming things. So like, you know, it's just know that these problems are out there, but you get better at it with time and practice, and all of that. I guess maybe not the best advice there, but it goes back a little bit to, you have to get your hands dirty and run into problems to figure out that they are problems that you need to find solutions for.
Absolutely. And this actually made me think of like a question that's almost like a tangent, but not a tangent. And it's because you had mentioned, you know, that there's two different roles in that first scenario. You're saying the designer and then the web developer. And, you know, we've been talking a lot on this show about really the sustainability of this industry, because we're starting to wear a lot of hats, and like, you know, I've run a small business, so naturally it comes with the territory. But now it's like, even in the big corporations and the big skyscrapers, you got people wearing about 15 hats, it feels like, in web development, because it's like, we'll design it and then develop it, but then deploy it, but then also have the tests written and then have the lab set up. So that's sysadmin. Whoa, you know, it's a lot of stuff. So I don't know what your take is. Like, what do you think about the sustainability of this industry? Like, are we walking into a problem where we're starting to get people that are already definitely jack of all trades and not masters of any? Because I mean, I used to just do sysadmin full time, and now it's like, yeah, by the way, just like go and set up those servers. I'm like, that's my old job, and that's just like, I'm just doing that, you know, this afternoon, and then I gotta go design. Like, what's going on here? So what do you think about the sustainability of the industry? Like, are we going to start cutting down, or like,
that's a good question that I don't have a good answer for, because I don't.
It's difficult. No, we've been talking about it for episodes and episodes and episodes. Like,
yeah, I think it's one of those things that might ebb and flow a little bit. I think it depends where you're at, or, you know, different in part, because that's the one thing that's like funny with web development is too, is like, you know, there's so many branches of it in terms of clients. Even like, are you working in-house? Is it, you know, or you could be at an in-house at a pharmaceutical company as the web development, or you could be at an agency that's working across like all of these different, it has all these different clients. You could be at one of the FAANG companies. Like there's all these different sort of like scenarios and stuff. And I think each one of them has really unique and different aspects of what you're talking about going on with it. Whereas like, you know, especially the in-house ones, I think get, and even if you're doing more client work where you're dealing with a lot of clients, like I don't think they always realize that it's all different skill sets. It's just like, well, that's the website, right? Like, so yeah, I don't have an answer on how to deal with that though.
No, it is a difficult question because some people will come at you, you know, and say, you know, oh, and it's totally sustainable, you know, because there's tools that help you. So like, there's all these tools that help with the server admin, but then I'll say, yeah, but what happens when that tool says, hey, can't sync? And you don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, you know, type thing. But it is good insight that you gave there because, you know, if you are in a specific company, then you have a different context. And like, there's going to be a spin up and probably a training period, depending on what your role is. And so you're going to have a different experience than someone who's in an agency. And then the agency will have a ceiling as well, where they'll go, you know what, like, we're not using enterprise CMS. We're using WordPress. We're using some custom code. But if you want, what's a common one, a Typo3 or something like that. If you want like an enterprise CMS, you know, you got to go somewhere else. Like, we have to turn away those customers because we're not going to have, you know, 60 people in each type of CMS. Like, it's starting to get out of control. So maybe that is right. Like, maybe it's the job roles themselves, or like the position that the actual job is in, will help sort of ebb and flow those disperse, let's say, that those skill sets.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do think that in general, like you said, sometimes there's that expectation that people can maybe figure things out that are outside of what their real scope is. And I don't know, it's hard to manage expectations. You hear about it, not just within our industry either. I think it's all over the place. Especially, and I do think there's more pressure now as everybody seems to be downsizing. So once, you know, once the ebb and flow starts going the other way, hopefully it also, you know, as teams once again start expanding, because it's going to happen, because we've seen this happen over and over again. So once that happens, hopefully that helps shift things on that side a little bit too.
For sure. And like, just having, you know, having run an agency for a long time, we've bailed people out because it's been like, hey, I run a salon. One of my people, like, I have a high turnover rate, and one of my people said they could make a website. So they did, but I don't like it. And then they stopped answering me, but they also left because, again, high turnover rate, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, like, yeah, they're not going to, just because they made the website, I got to stick around and be like, yeah, I'll just keep making a website for life. You know, like, what's going on here? And then you look and it's like all kind of amateur hour. And they're like, they'll say that this is amateur hour. I'm like, yeah, because it literally was. This person, you know, grabbed Wix or something and never used Wix, you know, and then just threw it together like a course. Of course it was amateur hour. Literally what it was. So context matters, I guess, is what we're getting at. So I do want to change gears kind of for a final time in the show, because, you know, we're talking about tutorials, we're talking about CSS concepts individually, but then we started talking about some content. But I do want to kind of shift over to, you know, when you work on a project, if you were like, okay, I'm going to spin up a project, whatever it is, professional, personal, but it's going to go to the masses, or at least go to a client intranet or something like that. What technologies would you use?
So yeah, these days I'm really in love with Astro. I've been using it for quite a few different things, and it's handling everything I've been throwing at it. So on that side of things, it's been great. I've used Svelte in the past too, and I like it as well. But sort of, I found part of it's also because I am teaching stuff, so like I want to use things that I'm also going to be able to make content around, and I've just felt that Astro is easier to sort of ease into for like a beginner, like. The next step was a bit cleaner for me, or I found it easier to teach. So then I started using it more at the same time, and it just sort of spun up from there. So yeah, that's sort of where I've been at on terms of that. People always ask me on my CSS how I write it. So it is project dependent on, is it only vanilla? If I'm using Astro, I'll use scope styles in there. But if it's just vanilla, if it's a small project I'm working on, sure, that's fine. I don't need to worry about, if it's something that I'm not thinking like this is going to scale up and be something pretty big, that's fine. But I have developed over the years my own system using SAS, that's sort of like a CSS framework of sorts that I use. So that's a lot more robust. It's a lot more scalable. And every project just starts from that sort of template that I have to start from. So I use that on anything that's going to be more than just sort of a quick thing that I'm spinning up. On that side of things. Yeah.
Yeah. The second person that's really advocated for Astro, James Quick, was on the show a few weeks ago, And like, yeah, he was like, he was super nastro. And we got him to explain it all. Cause like, again, I'm just starting to learn Svelte. I'm the small to medium business guy. So I'm always in WordPress. I just kind of like living there. Not even really coding at the time. I'm just sort of like helping people. It's more project manager than really anything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's like, it's interesting to hear. Cause it also sort of plugs in or allows like the syntax of like Svelte and React. And I think maybe another one in there as well, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's cool that you can bring your own, you know, JavaScript framework if you feel like you need it, but you don't need to have it, which is cool. And that ships static by default, zero JavaScript by default, but then you can add what you need or enable, you know, the different stuff as you need it, which is, I think, is a nice approach as well. And I will say it's not for everything that you're doing. For the type of content that I do and the type of projects I work on, it's perfect, right? So it is one of those things where, like, you see someone doing like a single page portfolio using React, and it's just like, it's not really what React's for, right? Like it seems a little heavy handed to need React for something like that. Whereas like Astro would be perfect. And it's even like, I like it in the sense too, over like options like Next.js and other stuff, just because you can use React if you want, or I could use Svelte, or I could use Vue. I think you can even bring Angular into it now. And I'm like, so like just being a bit more agnostic on that front to me is kind of nice. Cause you could, you know, depending on what you need, you could have multiple in a given project if you needed to. I don't know if I'd want to do that, but it's an option. So yeah, I just find it cool. And just getting started with it, I just found really easy and nice on that front too.
Would you recommend Astro to an actual beginner? Like if it's someone that has just learned the vanilla, like we talked about in the beginning of the show, do you think that Astro would be a natural next step, or should they be doing this sort of job hunt thing? Look around in my area, everyone's React. I better learn React. Like, what do you think on there?
That's a good question. I do think the nice thing with Astro is it's just like a nice way to get into like adding templating in. So like getting past having to have a nav that you have to change on every file that you have, right? Every page, like you just have your nav component. You can just update that one component. So I think it's a nice way to sort of learn about the idea of components and template pages and template layouts and that side of things. But in a really, like, it feels like just that next step of HTML almost. And you do have to learn, you know, you do have to open up your command line and do a couple of things, but it's really not like involved on that front. So it's a little bit like we were mentioning earlier, where it's a nice first step, I think. And that could get you comfortable with those concepts and then getting into something like React that does take a little bit more and is a bit more intensive. So like then it could be that next step that you take from there. I guess it depends on how much time you have to learn everything too, and when you're hoping to get that job, because yeah, if you see that everybody in, you know, but that's the one thing I will say is like React is always the one you hear about, but do look at local job postings and local job markets and stuff, because the city I used to live in Montreal, there was so many Angular jobs. It was crazy. I had a friend who just kept like finding new work in Angular. And I was like, oh, really? I wouldn't have expected it, but cool. And it was all like, it's these big companies and government stuff. And like, it's just these existing things that have been around for 10 years. So of course, like they're not using React because the base that they're all being built on top of were created before React even existed or at the very beginning days of it. So they were using established technology, and there's lots of jobs that are really good, really high paying that are out there that use other stuff, but it really depends on the market. So look at the type of job you want to be getting, look at job postings and see what's there. Cause that will probably influence a little bit of what you want to learn next.
For sure. And the one thing that popped in my mind was Ruby, like Ruby on Rails. Like I looked at learning it right when I was starting to, what do I learn, what, years ago? And then I just sort of, it was like, yeah, like that's probably not going anywhere. And then we had a couple meetings with some people and they're like, oh man, like I'm a Ruby on Rails dev. We got a massive demand for, it's like, what's going on here? Like, are you the only ones? Like what's happening here? So I do have another question here, and that's just about, because I know some beginners that are listening to this are probably going to be like, okay, you know, I've got a good idea of like, you know, what projects you work on and like what technologies you use, but what about the environment? Because that's like a big sort of pain point. Like dev environment is like I don't know dev environment stuff. I just learned all this syntax stuff. My head's going to explode. Like, what do I do? So like, what type of workflow do you have, and what do you recommend maybe people learn as well? Like, do they learn CI/CD? Are you using Git? Are you just using like a OneDrive? Like what do you think?
That's like that one thing too, that's really hard like, I would definitely, like, I think everyone should have at least a half decent understanding of Git and you know, how that works. But it's one of those things that's impossible to teach, because when you learn to do it solo, and then all of a sudden you go to do it, you get hired in your first job and you're like, yeah, I know GitHub, no problem. Or I know how to use Git, no problem. And then you go from being this, you know, doing it solo, or you're making your own little branches and then merging in, and there's just like, you're thrown into like where there's 40 people working on something and there's all this stuff going on, and you're just like, well, this is different. This isn't how I learned how Git works. And I don't know, and I'm scared to do anything because I'm going to break something. And you will, and that's normal. I think any dev has a story of pushing something to production or something that breaks production. I've done it. I think everybody I've talked to has done it at one point. So yeah, I think the only advice I have on that front is to try and get a couple of open source projects. If you can, just doing a couple small things, even, there's resources out there that are like for people making their first, open source contributions. So like just put in like first timer open source or something, and you'll find sites where they like find pull, like, you know, there's issues that are open that are perfect for a first timer because they're not too complicated. It's sort of a nice way to get started. So like, I think that's a really nice way just to sort of like, okay, I'm actually doing something that's going to production, part of a team. There'll be, you know, I'll learn the steps where like someone else is actually going to look at this before it gets approved and pulled in, and you're learning that side of things. So I think that's really important. In terms of my own workflow, I don't have tons of advice because most of what I do now is I'm by myself, so I can sort of just wing it and do it, even if it's the wrong way of doing it. And I don't do tons of production other than my own projects that I'm working on, just because I'm doing tons of content on CSS and just sticking with that. So yeah, I don't have, outside of what I just said, I'm not sure I have the best advice for anybody on that front.
It is absolutely something that it is like a totally different, because I learned Git by myself, and then I got hired just to help with some CSS layouts, like real quick, just like, hey, like do these quick. And I was like, okay, like they're done, because I just had a random contact in the company. It wasn't like I was hired formally or anything. It was a couple $100, you know, can you help us out?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And so I did it. And then I was like, okay, like, what do you want me to do? And they're like, well, just like do this PR, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, This is going to be more work than the layout.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And you really don't want to screw it up. And like, yeah. It's that first time you put in the pull request is very stressful.
Yeah, it was something. I was like, well, like pull, but like, am I putting in a pull? Well, yeah, I'm putting in a pull request, but you're pulling. And it's like, even just to get the vernacular down in your head, it's just like, what is going on here? So the one, like the first timer sort of open source project that they recommended, totally, like, that's a great idea. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think that concludes this interview. And thank you very much, Kevin, for coming on the show. But before we end this episode, I'd like to give you the floor, and you can plug whatever you'd like, YouTube, website, whatever you'd like. The floor is yours.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on. It was a blast talking. Yeah. If anybody wants to follow what I'm up to, you want to learn about CSS. My thing is always trying to help people fall in love with it, because I know it can be frustrating. But trying to teach people not just how to do stuff, but understand how it works. So if that sounds interesting, just looking up my name on YouTube, we'll probably find what you're looking for. Just add CSS if there's anything, and you'll get tons of stuff. I have over 700 videos now, so there's lots of CSS YouTube videos floating out there. And if there's anything else, you know, I do a weekly newsletter. So if you feel like having more emails in your inbox, there's that. And then you can find that at my website. So it's just kevinpowell.co. That's about it. There are also links to my socials. So my Mastodon, my Twitter and stuff are on there if you want to follow me on social media.
Excellent. And for the listener out there, all those links will be in the show notes on htmlallthethings.com. So you can just quickly click on them and get right to them as you should. And once again, thank you, Kevin, for being on the show. It was a blast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that interview as much as we did, but it is time to end. And before we end, I'd like to remind you that we do have a Scrimba affiliate link. If you want to learn with their interactive media player code editor, go and check out that link. It'll be in the show description if your app supports it, your podcast app supports it. If not, no worries. It'll be on htmlallthethings.com with our show notes for this episode. And remember that we are also on Patreon if you want to support episodes like this. That's patreon.com/htmlallthethings. And many thanks to our $3 tier patrons, Tim from The Web Hacker on thewebhacker.com, Jason from Geek Life Radio via geekliferadio.com, Fire Ant Season via fireantseason.com, Garrett Segal, Level Up Financial Planning via www.levelupfinancialplanning.com, and Joshua via silvio.us. We also like to give a shout out to Michael Araca, a contributing author on htmlaldothings.com. Michael is the author of Self-Taught, the X Generation blog at selftauttxg.com. Feel free to leave a comment or a review on the platform that you are listening to this on, and this outro will sign us off.
You've been listening to HTML All the Things Podcast. Web development, web design, and small business. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. And we hope you appreciate that we talk to you like human beings. And we hope you had some fun. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit us up on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon at HTML All the Things. And on Twitter at HTML Everything. Until next time, this is HTML All the Things. Signing off.